morning. You're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today we'll be airing the second half of my conversation with Jeffrey Flory on the invasive species common buckthorn. Jeffrey Flory is an invasive species technician for the 1854 Treaty Authority, which has an office in Duluth. Now back to that interview. And also having people know that it's not just totally widespread in the northeastern Minnesota, so we are trying to stop it because Correct. Maybe people from the Twin Cities are just like, oh, it's that again. It's everywhere right. in the Twin Cities.
It's too late in the Twin Cities. I would say Duluth's kind of on the knife's edge. We might be too far gone, or we might be able to put it under control. Odds are we're probably too late. So probably Duluth is the biggest front that we probably can't eradicate it from, and we'll always have to deal with it surrounding Duluth. But if we can try to keep a buffer around Duluth clear of buckthorn, the better. But glossy buckthorn is also present here in Duluth, and it has also been found in the Cloquet area and also in the Sudan mines. So it is spreading as well. Okay. And so there's our other front that we need to deal with it, because Ely is not that far away from Lake County. That's another door into Superior National Forest. Yes. And sadly, not enough is being done in that area to deal with it.
And I would imagine it could go up into the boundary waters.
Very
with,
easily.
You know, all the hikers and
very easily. As far as we know, it's still contained just in Ely, but I don't think there's been enough surveys in the state forests and Superior National Forest surrounding Ely to really know the extent.
Do you have any recommendations for the best approach to use when you're going to treat buckthorn? Remove the seed trees first, or, you know, I've read from the DNR that you should start at the edge of a infestation and move in towards the center of it.
One issue is there's no actual ideal recommendation on this. It just depends on the conditions, the circumstances, and what you've got going on and the time of year. For instance, in the wintertime when I'm treating, I don't want to treat new infestation sites or try to locate them because I'm not going to find them. I'd be trying to search for a needle in a haystack. So when I'm treating in the wintertime, I'm targeting the densest spots. So that way I'm efficient with my time. But during under the right conditions, it is ideal to target the new infestations that have spread from known infestations. And then to target those known infestations starting, like you said, from the outer edges and you're working your way in. When I'm doing it, it depends on the property owner and what they want me to do. So some want me to just eliminate all the buckthorn. And so, you know, I'm treating both female and male buckthorns, common buckthorn. But in some areas, if there's lack of time or you also just have a large area to, it's definitely ideal to target the female buckthorn first with those berries. If you can stop the buckthorn from reproducing, or at least slow it down, you know, that's a lot fewer seeds that you have to deal with from germinating. Another thing to consider, too, is by just removing all of it, it's opening up the canopy. And even though we talked about birds and other ways that the seeds are spread, the majority of them actually drop underneath the buckthorn. And so you remove the buckthorn, you then just have a carpet of seedlings rise up from the ground, and that's all you see. I've got plenty of pictures of this, and it's scary. And I've even seen the results, if nothing's done about it, where you literally can't see more than 3 or 4 feet in front of you because it's just so thick with saplings that are, you know, 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
But the stems are, you know, only the size of a button. Because since they're all competing, they're going to grow taller than girthier.
Yes. So how would you deal with that?
If you come across patches of seedlings, if it's the first year, prescribed fire will kill them. If it's past a year or two, the fire will kill the top, but the roots will be able to survive that and resprout. So a couple fires would work. Another would be foliar spraying with triclopyr. Problem with that is the residue of the chemical does then impact the native species when they come in after you've removed them. you can try to spray then in mid to late fall when all the natives have gone dormant, so that way they're not intaking any of the chemical. But that, from my experience, that's kind of a hit or miss, because sometimes if you're a little too late, even though the leaves are still attached to the stem, it's still not drawing in any more nutrients. And so then you've added chemical to the environment, but it didn't actually kill the buckthorn.
Okay.
So it's a very small window of time for that, but it's very effective if you hit it just right. And it has less impact on the native species then.
What our district did was go through some patches along a bike trail in Two Harbors and use a chainsaw and cut them and then treat the stump.
Yep. Problem with that is whenever you do cut and treat,
mm-hmm.
you want to treat as soon as possible.
Yep.
An hour is doable. A day is always too late. But definitely the more time between cutting and treating guarantees that, just like humans, you know, we get a cut, we scab over. Trees do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They will close off the receptors and then the chemical won't be absorbed. So it sounds like we're going into chemicals and treatment types.
Yeah.
A couple options are you can use basal bark treatments. That's with triclopyr is the chemical. The brand name is Garlon 4 Ultra. And you can mix that with diesel, but that's not so environmentally friendly. So we mix that with bark oil. And the purpose of that is to dilute the chemical so that way we don't overapply chemical and break laws, but more importantly, so that way we don't harm the environment. They're mm-hmm. there for a reason.
Yes.
The regulations are there for a reason.
Yes. And you can also add dye, and that really helps see
the,
where
the bark oil actually comes with the dye.
Okay.
Bark oil blue LT is what we use, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, because we treat large areas, we buy a 15-gallon drum that has 12 gallons of bark oil in it.
Wow.
And then we pour in 2.5 gallons of element 4, the chemical, mix that up, and then we leave that in our office and we pump it into a empty Garlon 4 jug and use the jug of mixed chemical to transport to our work site. You never want to put chemical into a different container, like a milk jug, because mistakes are easy to happen that way. So you always keep the chemical in its original container.
And you always need to follow that label.
You always need to follow the label. The label is the law, and yet the labels are so tough to understand. They're made very ambiguously so that way they can cover all aspects of the law to try to cover up any, prevent any loopholes.
Yeah.
But in that ambiguity makes it then tough to follow. So it's mm-hmm. kind of hit or miss. And then something else that I learned is there's also, besides the laws, the company also adds in their recommendations that don't necessarily follow the law, but can get confusing that way as well.
And the label will have information on your personal protective equipment and everything you need to wear to apply it safely without
correct.
Harming yourself.
Well, that leads into Garlon 3A, which is a water-based chemical. Garlon 4 is an oil-based chemical, which is why you can apply it to the bark.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's kind of a fatty oil, it will soak into the bark. One thing... go ahead.
Do you need to paint it all the way around, or how do you apply it to...
Okay. For applying Garlon 4, you need to... Painting it doesn't work so well because you need it to get through into all the bark. Spraying it is probably ideal with that. Okay. Some people do paint it. I've heard it works, but I trust spraying it better because putting on a thicker coat of the chemical guarantees you're getting into the cracks, especially the bigger buckthorn with that rough bark.
Mm-hmm.
Rule of thumb is if it's a skinny buckthorn, smooth bark, you don't need to use as much chemical. As you start getting to the bigger, thicker bark with all the sloughing bark, you know, that you see with most older trees of any species, you have to add a thicker layer of bark or a chemical. Something also to consider is you've got to treat all around the stem. Any strip that you don't treat is a lifeline to the buckthorn. That chemical kills the tissue, and some of it does absorb down into the roots. It doesn't have to go all the way into the roots, just the root crown, because
mm-hmm.
that's where it sprouts. you have to make sure you spray under the right conditions. Because it's oil-based, anything water acts as a barrier and protects the buckthorn. If the bark is soaked from rain, if it is covered in snow or ice, or even if the snow covers above a foot, anything above a foot, you might kill the top, but then you don't kill that root crown, and so then you'll get a bunch of suckers coming up under the base wherever the tree doesn't die.
Yeah.
And then you've got that ugly hydra that's even more difficult to deal with.
Yes.
And you use up a lot more chemical treating those.
I can imagine it'd be hard to get around the whole thing. I mean, around each stem there.
Right. Well, the key thing is it's got to be below the lowest branch.
Okay.
So even if you've got all these heads coming up, okay, if there's a single stem, as mm-hmm. long as you treat underneath all those other branches,
okay,
that's ideal. Sometimes it's, those branches are coming off pretty low, so then you've got more stems to treat, and yeah, it gets kind of difficult to treat all around these extra stems. The other thing to consider, too, is the smaller the buckthorn, the smaller the circumference,
mm-hmm.
the smaller the bandwidth around the stem can be. Once when you start getting to the big buckthorns, you need to start getting the bandwidth to be about a foot wide on some of the big ones. Medium-sized ones can be maybe 6 inches,
yeah,
roughly.
Interesting.
But to get back to Garland 3A, the water-based, you mix that with water to dilute it. And again, purpose for that is so that way you don't overapply the chemical. You then also add dye to help you recognize what you've treated and what hasn't been treated. And because it's water-based, you can't apply it to the bark. You have to cut it and treat it. Or you can do what is called hack and spray, where you girdle the tree and you spray the inner bark just so that way you use less chemical. If you cut a big tree, you don't even have to treat the whole stump. You just have to treat the outer ring where the bark is, because you're treating that living tissue
mm-hmm.
that's between the bark and the heartwood. And limitations to Garland 3A is, because it is water-based, it won't, it'll freeze in the wintertime, so it will not work in the winter.
Yeah.
I'd just like to remind everyone, you're listening to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with Jeffrey Flory, an invasive species technician for the 1854 Treaty Authority, about the invasive species common buckthorn.
We run into a lot of people who are opposed to using chemicals, and do you know if there are any effective ways of removing buckthorn without having to use these chemicals?
There are a couple. One is, if it's still small enough, you can pull it. One problem with that is, you know, the roots are very shallow and very fibrous with common buckthorn.
Mm-hmm.
And the more soil you disturb, the more it helps seeds germinate and create the thicket. But sometimes that's your only option. If it's a bit bigger, again, the roots aren't what resprout, it's that root crown. So if it's too big to pull out, if you can maybe snip the base of the tree and get underneath,
mm-hmm.
so that way you're not disturbing it as much, but that's also very difficult to then do. And if you miss any part of that root crown, it could then sprout back up.
Mm-hmm.
There is a father-son duo that created something called buckthorn baggies. It's these bags, and you can get different varying sizes, I think, and it's got a zip tie attached at the top. So you put it over the buckthorn, and you zip tie it shut.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's far enough down on the base, all the resprouts will be stuck in the bag, and it'll choke it out from sunlight. I would guess that it's not as effective, because if a storm happens, something rips the bag open, you know, it won't be as effective with... There's more chances of the treatment not working, but it is an option. And it's more feasible on small infestations and also on private properties. But mm-hmm. when dealing with it on large scales, especially on public properties, you need something more efficient and effective.
Mm-hmm.
But it is there as an option. And so, you know, the key thing is let's get all the known tools out to the people to know about so that way they can choose what works for them based on the situation, conditions, and preferences.
Yeah, and we have one of those.
Oh, weed wrench.
It's like a weed wrench, but it's a different brand. But it's the same basic tool that you can use to pull out. If little bits of roots remain, that's okay.
Right. Bits of roots are okay. It's that central section within the roots, kind of where the trunk meets the roots, is what you have to remove.
Okay.
I don't know the actual definition of a root crown. So that's something that maybe you can look up online and get more details on what that is.
Yeah. But that can be a little hard on your back. And there's a limit to how thick the trunk can be.
That is true. And again, the bigger the tree, the more disturbance you cause in the soil, and the more you are promoting more seeds to germinate.
Yeah. Do you know how long seeds last in that seed bank?
It depends on the conditions, but generally they can last between 5 to 7 years. If you're lucky, maybe 3 to 5. Also to consider, too, glossy buckthorn. I mentioned how common buckthorn, you've got male plants and you've got female plants. So some will produce fruit and others won't. And that's why you can then target the berry producers, remove that to quickly remove the seed source. So that way you don't have more seeds continually being added to your seed bank.
Yes.
But glossy buckthorn is monoecious, meaning the flowers have both male and female parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
So all glossy buckthorns produce berries. Oh. On top of that, common buckthorn takes 5 to 7 years before it matures and can produce.
Mm-hmm.
Glossy buckthorn does that between 3 to 5 years. So it's even a much shorter window of time to remove it before it starts adding to the soil.
Yes.
Or seed bank.
Right. So if you cut down some of the buckthorn on your property and treat the stumps or whatever, what do you do with that woody material?
Well, because it is a regulated species by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, it cannot move off of your property unless you have the proper permits to remove it. And with those permits, you still have to then properly contain it so that way in transit, it is not going to spread across while it's in transit.
Yeah.
So having the berries fall off and roll off from the streets into the side or the ditches and start buckthorn there. And when you're doing that, you also have to have in mind where you're taking it for its proper disposal. It cannot be used to create compost, unless it's at a certified location that heats their compost pile to a certain temperature to fully kill the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
In Duluth, the WLSSD, they follow all the regulations. Last time I heard 2 years ago, they weren't certified, but they followed all the regulations. But there was a long list of places to be certified.
So you could try and maybe treat it before there are berries on the plants.
Yep, you can treat it before there are berries. Also, if it's a huge and heavy infested area, adding a few more 100 berries is a small component to the issue. If it's a new infestation where it's a small one and nothing else around and it's some berries, then definitely remove the berries, maybe put it in a fire pit, burn it, and then it's all concentrated in that fire pit so that if any germinate, well, hey, you're using that as a fire pit anyways. You can just create another fire, kill it off, and hopefully it gets hot enough to kill most of the seeds anyways. But also be careful about transporting it to that fire pit on your property. Remember, you can't remove it from your property because you can be spreading it in transportation to your fire pit.
Yes.
So probably burning it is the best way to eliminate the seeds if it's a small, early infestation that you don't want to contribute to the seed bank.
Yeah. And then I wanted to just ask about, you know, following up on a site. If you treat it with a chemical, you might have to think about the persistence of that in the soil. Do you know how long Garlon lasts?
I do not know how long that lasts. I know you are not supposed to spray more than 8 pounds of the active chemical per acre per year.
Okay.
So those are the limits. So, you know, if you treat year after year, as long as you're staying within those amounts, you can keep applying every year. But the limit is per year.
Yeah. But I would think people want to do some native plantings or get some other species in there to take the place of the buckthorn so that it doesn't just come back. But it's like weighing the, you know, the seed bank is going to germinate, and then do you want to treat that? And so when do you want to plant?
You know, there's no hard, fast rule in that. It just depends on the situation. Planting natives will help because you're adding more competition back into the system, which will help reduce the number of seedlings that germinate. But at the same time, you've got to deal with those seedlings, so you're still applying chemical. So it's a tough balance to choose of, you know, do I keep treating for a couple of years, exhaust the seed bank before I then start planting? Or if the numbers aren't, the buckthorn infestation isn't that bad, it'd probably be better to add in the native species to help compete. And then because it's maybe low-dense seed bank, you know, maybe it's feasible to then just hand pull any that come back up to reduce the amount of chemical you're applying around your newly planted species.
Yeah.
The other key thing is in the Twin Cities, when they remove buckthorn, you know, the buckthorn's been there for so long that there's very little seed bank of native species left in their forests. Thankfully up here, because it's fairly new, you're more likely to, after you remove the buckthorn, have the native seed bank come back in, and you won't, you might not need to plant native species. So it just depends on your circumstances.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's complicated when we're talking about the large scale treatments that, like the SWCD is doing, because it's a huge investment of money to get boreal natives or someone to plant natives, and it's like, we don't want to just go back and kill them all doing another treatment or something in the soil. But
well, and sometimes you might be, if you know what you're collecting, you could go out into public forests if you're allowed to collect seed, collect a couple seeds and either try to germinate them in your greenhouse or spread them in your forest. But, you know, make sure you know where you're collecting it from, that you know this is a native, and that you're allowed to collect it from that property.
Yes.
Follow the law.
Good advice. I guess we'll just jump quickly to the end here. What should people do if they find an infestation on their private land or, like, public land?
If you find it on public land, you can definitely, if you've got a smartphone, and download the app Gleden. That's Great Lakes Early Detection Network. It will pop up, and important organizations and people that watch that list will then know where it's at. Private property is a little trickier. If it's your own private property, you've given yourself permission to mark it on Gleden. If it's on somebody else's, you need permission from that private landowner first before you can mark it on Gleden. Another thing is you can just look up who your contacts are in Lake County.
Lake County SWCD is definitely, we would like to be contacted.
You can contact them and they would know who else to inform and to rally behind to deal with the infestation. It's a lot easier to treat on public property because of certain regulations and funding restrictions. Yes. Private property is going to be much more difficult. I don't know what the circumstances would be up in Lake County to help on private property. One of the biggest issues in the Twin Cities and in Duluth is we can remove it from public property all we want, but any buckthorn in low or high densities on private property surrounding the public one, the seeds are just going to keep moving in.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a drain on funds to have to constantly hunt and search and identify new, new spread locations and to then also deal with it. So the fact that we can't do anything on private property really hurts efforts to actually eradicate it.
It does.
Chances of eradication in Duluth are pretty much nil just because of its presence on private properties. And also due to lack of information, and some people prize their hedges of buckthorn, or even their featured tree in their yard of buckthorn, of a buckthorn tree.
Yeah. That was one question I forgot to ask. What is a similar type of plant that a person could replace a prized buckthorn with, or like if they wanted a hedge type?
Royal natives would know a lot. In terms of hedges, a lot of good native hedge species, one of their issues is that they tend to spread clonally. Mm-hmm. And so then you're then dealing with that some people don't want. But then again, buckthorn's spreading by all these seeds. So alder would work. Clump species. Any kind of shrubby species. In terms of a featured tree, if you don't want it tall like an oak or aspen, you know, maybe a juneberry or a hawthorn if you don't mind the thorns. And, you know, it provides great food for birds if you love songbirds. Or if you really want the cool, are they called shrikes? Yeah, where they actually catch rodents. The rodents are too big for this tiny bird to kill, but they impale them on the hawthorns. So it's a native tree that feeds songbirds, and you might get a cool bird.
Just to quickly wrap up, do you have hope for successful control in the Arrowhead region? I know you said maybe not for Duluth, but for the rest of the Arrowhead region.
Yes. Early detection and eradication is key. And also preventing people from spreading it. Whether that's people who might think, oh, this is a nice plant, and they transplant it. Or spread the seeds on construction equipment or on your hiking boots. So it's a long process. It's always going to be in Duluth, so it's always going to be a threat. But if you can remove these satellite populations, these new infestations, before they take over and kill out our natives and wreak the damages, that is key.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner is produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funding from NOAA and the Office for Coastal Management, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. Thank you all for listening. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.